Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. All crazy edition today, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Crazy, crazier, and craziest martinis for you as we have our first podcast for the month of February. Happy Groundhog Day, everyone. Let's start with crazy number one. It's the only one that really deals with politics. And Jim, there seemed to be a little order in the world on Friday when Mitt Romney announced he was not going to be seeking the Republican presidential nomination for the third time. It seemed like finally we were starting to see more people decide not to get in, particularly people perhaps whose either time has passed or people who never really had a chance. But oh no, oh no, the last couple of days have been very rich in the department of people who probably have zero chance of winning but are yet seriously considering a run for the GOP nomination. Yesterday on Face the Nation, comprehensive immigration reform specialist Lindsey Graham once again pointed out that he has started a PAC for the purpose of exploring a presidential bid. Nora O'Donnell saying, conservatives don't like you on immigration. You voted for both of the president's Supreme Court nominees. And so why do you think you have a chance? Here's what he said.
So I'm very comfortable that I'm in the mainstream of conservatism. I've done very well in a red state. And when it comes to national security and understanding the threats our nation faces, I believe I'm the best qualified of anybody on our side of the aisle to offer an alternative to a failed foreign policy of Barack Obama. Mm-hmm.
If that weren't enough, Fox News reporting, among others, that former New York Governor George Pataki, now 69 years old, says on Monday he's actively exploring a 2016 Republican bid as well. He plans to travel to New Hampshire on Tuesday and has opened a political action committee of his own. So, Jim, just when you thought that the podium makers of the world were going to be running low on work, not so fast.
You know, when George Pataki says he's actively exploring a bid, it means like a hunter, he's looking far and wide for the one guy who thinks he should run for president. Because in both of these guys, you know, we've had our beefs with both of them. I think it was Pataki, you know, National Review declared the worst Republican governor in America. Certainly didn't build up the state party. It is, you know, not much of a legacy there in terms of that. He's been off the stage for a really long time. It seems like I'm vastly overestimating his sense of how popular he was when he was in office, certainly amongst national Republicans. Lindsey Graham, we know him as being extraordinarily hawkish on foreign policy and national security issues. Very pro-NSA and domestic surveillance, by the way, which I think is a you know, one of those issues kind of splits the Republican base down the middle. And then kind of the last part is that Lindsey Graham is the kind of guy who will nail Sonia Sotomayor to rights on the wise Latina comment and then let her off the hook. The idea that this is exactly what Republicans are clamoring for. We kind of have the John Huntsman slot crowded, Greg. Usually we got one guy, we're like, he's the Republican for people who don't like Republicans. You know, it's just kind of baffling to both these guys. I don't know if it's a fundraising routine. I don't know if it's a cry for attention. But you kind of wish these guys would just say, look, you're not running for president. And if you do, it's going to be an embarrassment. So just skip over it. Who's around these guys telling them, yeah, you got to run for this office. It's a great idea.
Keep in mind, Jim, Lindsey Graham has his ace in the hole with the grassroots. John McCain loves Lindsey Graham.
The only other thing would be, you know, the side effect of a Lindsey Graham bid is all of a sudden the South Carolina primary doesn't mean much of anything.
That's true.
I'm presuming that he did run well in his home state, which some might doubt. On the other hand, he did win re-election and win his primary fairly handily against a small crowd of challengers. So, but yeah, it just seems like a very odd choice of these guys' ambitions, I think.
Jim, I heard one rumor, and obviously we can't prove this one way or the other, but that he's getting in because he detests Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and is trying to make their life as miserable as possible.
Then let somebody else do it. You know, like, none of these guys seem to realize that the more you jump in, the more crowded the side is in the mini primary. You know, if you're establishment, you think those guys are crazy, rootin' tootin', Yosemite Sam grassroots types, well, then putting a lot of establishment guys in there means all you guys spend time fighting each other, and the other guy said. And the flip side is true. If you don't like the establishment types, if you don't like Jeb Bush, Chris Christie, etc., then you want to see Lindsey Graham and all these other guys jump in. In fact, you know, Byron York has a piece today about how frustrated conservatives are that Mitt Romney dropped out, not because they wanted him to win, because they wanted him to run a lot of attack ads against Jeb Bush.
Jim, I know the NCAA doesn't like to call it a play-in game, but I think Pataki-Graham, that's a play-in game to get into that real first round of the NCAA/Republican primary. I think that's a good play-in game for us.
I was going to say, they really are the extremely small, last-ranked conference winner who really needs to qualify for the big show.
All right. Well, on to crazy number two, and the last two crazies have to do with the Super Bowl. And there were plenty of crazies we could have picked from last night. But the ads last night, Jim, were a little different for the most part. Nothing overly crude, as you pointed it out in the morning jolt. There were some good ads, not that many funny ads, more supposedly poignant ads, some trying to make political statements. Then there was this one that is pretty much uniformly hated from Nationwide Insurance.
Never learn to ride a bike. Or get coonies. I'll never learn to fly. Or travel the world with my best friend. And I won't ever get married. I couldn't grow up because I died from an accident.
Wait for it.
At Nationwide, we believe in protecting what matters most. Kids.
So if you don't want dead kids, Jim, you'll get Nationwide Insurance.
Not only do people hate that commercial during the Super Bowl, Greg, they're going to hate us for playing it during this podcast.
Probably.
You know, it was the single most depressing ad of all time. A real just, you know, gut-wrenching one. And I'm not even really sure how depicting this kid and his terrible, unfortunate death really makes people say, well, I better get some insurance, huh? Unless is the aim to get you to buy life insurance on your kids? Insurance doesn't prevent accidents. It's just something you deal with in case there is an accident. It was a really downer, depressing, mood-interrupting, awful one. And I think what's kind of striking about the overall, that was the worst of them. But there definitely was this more serious theme to the ads. And I think it seemed like everyone was trying to ape the God Made a Farmer. It wasn't silly, and it wasn't kind of guys getting kicked in the crotch as they reach for the Doritos or the Pepsi or something like that. And so every advertising agency said, okay, we're going to be serious this year. So we ended up with an unbelievably group of serious, in some cases, sappy and schmaltzy series of ads. And by and large, among the worst ads, a group of ads I think we've seen in many years.
Favorite ad? Mine was Liam Neeson, I think.
Which one is he?
That was the video game where he asked if you do want revenge, and he went into his whole Taken mode about how he wanted. He was in the Starbucks.
All right, yeah. For a moment, I thought you meant the. I guess I kind of like the life size Pac-Man.
Yeah, that was good. Very good. All right, on to the craziest of all, and for all the Patriot bashing we did, this one's kind of hard to take. Not that we love the Seahawks in any great way, but for those of you who didn't stay up for the end of the game, obviously the Patriots were down 10 at the start of the fourth quarter. They scored two touchdowns to go up four. The Seahawks get the ball left with about 2 minutes to go. They get the ball down inside the 10-yard line with a ridiculous catch that should have given nightmares to the Patriots on how they lost their last two Super Bowls with ridiculous catches in the last couple minutes. They run the ball with Marshawn Lynch, their beast mode, back down to the 1 yard line. They basically have three cracks at it, potentially, with one timeout left in their pocket with 26 seconds to go. Instead of running Lynch again and probably scoring the game winning touchdown, they decide to go with a pick route pass play that is intercepted. The Patriots take over, and for good measure, the Seahawks start a mini brawl with about 10 seconds left of the game. So, Jim, I hope you're doing okay today.
The end of the game fight was both teams uniting to say, hey, let's have one more embarrassing moment in this NFL season before it's officially over. First of all, congratulations, Patriots fans. Congratulations, Bill Belichick. Congratulations, Tom Brady. I think on that play, you could really see Pete Carroll's pedigree as a former coach of the New York Jets come to the fore. Because last night, immediately, everybody in the world was like, oh, my goodness. And they're like, how could they throw it? They're on the 1 yard line. They've got beast mode. You know, if it was any better, his nickname would be I can run it in from the 1 yard line mode. And instead, he was unused mode. Just a heartbreaking way to lose the game, utterly inexplicable, just a striking risk to take in those circumstances, considering how they, in all likelihood, had they run it, they had two timeouts, they had three chances, a really good chance they'd eventually get Marshawn Lynch to barrel in there, and the Patriots would have had less than a minute, probably, you know, 40 seconds, 30 seconds, something like that, less than that, to try to go down and kick a field goal and send the game into overtime. Pete Carroll, look, he's won two college championships. He won the Super Bowl last year. He got his team back to the Super Bowl this year. He's going to be remembered as a great coach, but this is going to be a big, you know, smear on that record. And it's going to be a very long off season for Seahawks fans, for Carroll, for the whole team. There was reports of very understandable grumbling in the locker room after the game. I don't think we've ever seen a team get so close and not win because of a very bad decision. I mean, the Titans receiver was, you know, stopped on the 1 yard line, and that was a similar, you know, everybody was giving their all and just came up 1 yard short. With this one, it was just a terrible decision. And last night it was like, oh, worst play call in NFL history, you know, in Super Bowl history. And you kind of figured within a day or two it might be revised, but I think with time, this is just going to be remembered as a worse and worse decision. The heart is broken for Seahawks fans across the country today.
That is true. Jim, I have some good news for you, though. Think about it this way. The Lions lost in heartbreaking fashion to the Cowboys. The Cowboys lost in heartbreaking fashion to the Packers. The Packers lost in heartbreaking fashion to the Seahawks. The Seahawks lost in heartbreaking fashion to the Patriots. So good news, Jim. The Patriots will lose their preseason opener in heartbreaking fashion.
Yeah, well, let's hope that it's let's hope it's regular season. But yeah, maybe it is. Maybe it's a transitive property, and you end up with circumstances like that. That a very strong possibility there. And yeah, it's going to be a long off season. But hey, only about 87 days until the draft.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Baseball starts, I don't know.
Jets fans call it the real season.
The real season. That's where you guys always dominate the draft, at least with the
crowd. Yeah. So mostly we get actually really excited about it. So.
Yeah, you either love or hate the pick. Usually hate, but it's always fun to watch. So, Jim, it's definitely been a crazy weekend. We'll hopefully have good news for folks on Tuesday.
It's got to be up from here, right, Greg?
You would have to think so. We certainly hope so. Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.